Hey, besties. I'm loving these new like summer flavors. Like in front of me, this was a two drink recording minimum session that we were doing. Like I needed my two drinks. So I have a strawberry watermelon polar seltzer. And then I have a berry lemonade health aid kombucha.
Nice.
That sounds nice.
I'm a big summer drink fan, personally. And that was the most interesting thing I could think to start this episode with. This is Unsubs a Criminal Minds podcast. Ever heard of us?
We need to stop saying that at some point. People are going to get so annoyed.
I don't know. What else do we say? Someone tell us what our catchphrase should be.
I have no idea. Well, maybe people do like the catchphrase. Maybe that's just me being cynical.
We're the podcast where we recap, rate, and review all 324 episodes of Criminal Minds. My name is Mac.
And I'm Abigail.
And I'm Jen.
And Jen is here with us today to cover season 6, episode 18, Lauren. We always start the show with a non-Criminal Minds fun fact. Does anyone have a fun fact that they would like to share?
I am graduating graduate school.
When is your graduation?
1 week away.
That's so exciting. You're done with finals?
Well, I have a few papers I still have to turn in, aka have to write them. And then after that, my roommate and I are going to Croatia.
That's exciting.
Well, two-part fact there.
That's so exciting and good for you. And now you can focus on your full-time job as a Criminal Minds Instagrammer.
True, because I don't have a job lined up once I get back. So that's great.
Yeah, you'll be fine. You'll do amazing things, and then maybe you'll come fuck around in New York.
Maybe I will.
Abigail, what about you? Do you have a fun fact?
I finished my first year of grad school.
I think that was your fun fact for another episode, though.
It was. So now I'm like finishing up a midterm class, but then it's going to be like I'm like actually doing hot girl summer, I guess, because I have several trips planned, which is very unlike me. It's going to be a good time. We're going to try to have some besties exclusives going on with maybe a joint Instagram live, because I'm visiting Mac for like the first time in like 10 years.
Yeah, it's crazy, guys. I'm so hyped. It's going to be a straight up blast. I'm going to take you to meet my parents like we're on a fucking date. I'm going to be like, Mom and Dad, here's Abigail. So that's crazy. You know, an adult life where you have to like introduce your friends to your parents.
The worst is when you are introduced to your friends' friends as an adult, but they don't give you any context on how they know them. So it's like, hey, this is my friend, I don't know, like Phil. And you're just like, hi, Phil. And like the friend who's introducing you is so caught up on hostessing or whatever that they like don't give you any sort of like byline as to how they know them. So it's just like, so how do you know like mutual friend? And it's like, oh, we work together. And you're like, that's cool. And the conversation's like dead. That's the worst.
So we do rate each episode. We recap it and we rate it. And we have 5 different rating criteria. An episode can score from a scale of 0 to 100. And they can score a total of 20 points in each of these categories. We have the criminal / serial killer. We have character development and or character arcs. We have forensics and context. We have script writing and background characters.
And we are in no way, shape, or form associated with Criminal Minds or anything therein. Please don't sue us. Please don't hit us with a cease and desist. We're just fans.
Jen has a nice long recap for us.
It's not. Okay, first of all, let's see how, if it's actually how long it is.
It's only 4 pages.
Mine was 11 pages.
Yeah, but it's Arial and 11-point font. Instead of Max embarrassing Calibri.
Is that mine?
Yeah.
Oh, it was just because I copied and pasted it from a Word document.
Oh my god.
I do also, like, do lots of little paragraphs, though. I've noticed this. Like, if I like to, like, have it in little sections because then I know where to stop and, like, pause or say something. And I noticed that you have very big paragraphs.
That's true. I do have longer paragraphs.
It's not a contest over who can write a shorter recap because I will always lose.
I think I win short recaps.
I don't know. This is pretty short, but again, look at those paragraphs. She's maximizing space.
Yeah, there's just no indentation.
And you had no profiles. I had 2 profiles.
You also have, like, the smallest, like the most narrow, like, paragraphs ever, Mac. Yeah, your margins are interesting.
Oh, it's because of my book. That's probably why. That explains a lot, because it's formulated to look like that. Okay. Well, we shall see next time, ladies and gentlemen. But today we're going to talk about Lauren.
Our episode begins with Prentice having just run out on the BAU, arriving at an Irish pub in Boston. She sits in a booth and pulls out the wrapper with the shamrock that Doyle gave her in their most recent face-off. So this would have been 2 episodes ago. From there, we flashback, there's lots of flashbacks in this episode, to 8 years ago in the same bar where Emily, as Lauren Reynolds, first met Ian Doyle. She is posing as an arms stealer seeking to get into business with a man named Valhalla, whom Doyle is familiar with.
Jack told me you were provisional IRA.
Used to be. Then the peace accord happened. I gotta look for work like everybody else.
Except Ian. That's a Protestant name, isn't it? Not a lot of Protestants in the IRA. Or is that how you proved you were a good fighter? Defending your mother for giving you that name?
And what is it you do, Lauren?
Right now, I'm trying to get into business with a former IRA captain. He's gone freelance. You might have heard of him. Valhalla.
Yeah. Am I know.
Well, since this is sensitive, est-ce qu'on peut parler en privé?
Tu es plein de surprises, dit-on.
They then start speaking French to each other and are getting a little bit flirty.
It's crazy to me, like, I'm usually very attracted to the unsubs, and Doyle doesn't do it for me, you know? He's not my type.
Is he not morally corrupt enough for you?
Is he not a taxidermist enough for you?
I did not like the taxidermist, to be clear. You were the one who liked him.
I liked his personality. I liked his...
entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, I was not attracted to him, but I felt that man could take care of me. You don't have to like everyone, but I try. I really try.
No, I think it's more the fact that Emily is Doyle's type than anything else is the takeaway. After the flashback, we return to the BAU, where they have realized that Prentice is on the run.
She's on the lam!
She's on the lam!
I did use that later on, just for you guys. But she's left behind her badge and her FBI gun. They are into profiling her old team and trying to uncover everything they can about her last mission with Interpol. Reed figures out that her code name when she was undercover was Lauren Reynolds, because the other members of the team also all had names that were initials LR. That is the jumping off point for the investigation.
Luke Renault, Lawrence Riley, Lila Rafferty,
Lyle Rogers.
All with the initials LR.
The CIA uses cryptograms like that to assign to non-official cover agents working the same case.
So do other foreign countries. These last four names are covers, spies.
Wait, this isn't right. Do you see this space? I shouldn't be here.
Could it be a formatting error?
No, this is a spreadsheet template. Formatting doesn't allow for this. There's a missing name on here.
It's another spy whose cover is LR.
Lauren Reynolds is dead. Lauren Reynolds is dead.
Lauren Reynolds is dead.
What?
Lauren Reynolds is dead. Prentice said that on a phone call 17 days ago, but her intonation wasn't surprise or grief. It was like a mantra, like she was reminding herself. Lauren Reynolds, LR.
If Prentice is the last name on that list, she's on Doyle's list, too.
That explains her behavior the past month. The secrets, the evasion.
She's been biting her fingernails again, too.
Guys.
She left her badge and gun. Why would she do that?
She kept the connection secret between her and Doyle because Doyle has been targeting families. And since Emily is single and isn't close with her biological family, she considers the BAU her family and wants to keep them as safe from Doyle as she can.
Yeah, I think at a later point in this episode, they straight up do call him a family annihilator. And then they also call him a power assertive psychopath. It's just kind of interesting to like think of him as a family annihilator, but he totally is. And that's something that like upon rewatching, it is like, you know, more prevalent now.
Yeah. And I think they should have like maybe emphasized that more in the more recent episode, right? Because they focused on like the fire a lot, but it was more about like the family thing.
I also really liked the way that they got to figuring out that Prentice was involved, because they get this document that Prentice gave them that she got supposedly from Sia, and it's this like Excel spreadsheet, and there is one space missing at the bottom of the Excel spreadsheet, and the rest of the team is like, oh, you know, that's just a formatting error. And Garcia is like, absolutely not. Like, that's Excel. You do not make mistakes in Excel. You do not understand. There are no extra cells in Excel. And they're like, oh, yeah, Emily is definitely a secret undercover spy for Interpol. And I'm like, damn, you guys really did jump to conclusions pretty fast. Like, not going to lie, you're correct, but like, damn.
They're just really relying on Reed's memory.
Back in Boston, Emily uses some interesting tactics to learn some information about Doyle through a local bar rat named Fahey. We see him in the earlier flashback too, where he's the one kind of orchestrating the meeting, the initial meeting between her and Doyle. Fahey is marginally involved, but he obviously, we learn, doesn't really know as much as he thinks he does. But at the same time, Hotch calls in some reinforcements for help on the case. The reinforcements, JJ is back, fresh from the State Department. And while this is happening, Emily is able to extract some key info about Doyle's whereabouts and whatnot by holding a gun to Fahey's head. And then just before the opening credits roll, we see her gun go off.
How many men does Doyle have, Jack?
Doyle? I haven't seen that guy in 15, maybe 20 guys.
Any surprises?
Just automatic weapons. It's mostly local mob guys. There's a little bit of IRA. And Lauren, how about you do me a favor? How you ease up on that gun, okay? I helped you and Clyde back in the day. I can help you now. Do you want to know what Doyle is?
I already do.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Take him out on your own.
What are you going to do? Tell him?
And now we're back at the BAU. JJ is briefing the team on what she knows about Emily's involvement with a special operation for the JTF unit of Interpol. And she says that Doyle was the target of her last case there before the team disbanded. Jeremy Wolf, Sean McAllister, and Sia Mosley are all dead. And now only Emily and the JTF unit leader, Clyde Easter, remain. Though Easter is apparently on the lam.
On the lam!
Also, like, did I miss Sean McAllister dying?
Yeah, he dies off screen.
And Sean was the guy who, like, first alerted Emily that, like, Ian Doyle was out of, I forget what episode that was, that, like, he was out of prison.
It's at the end of 613, the 13th step.
And then he also tells her that Ian Doyle was in Russia, even though we learned last episode that he was actually in North Korea. Okay.
I mean, he was in Russia at one point, right? But he wasn't in prison there.
Yeah, he escaped from North Korea and took a car into Russia. You know how you just go from one to the other.
Well, anyway, JJ also reveals that Emily went undercover to get Doyle because recon on him showed that she was his type. Rossi and Derek then visit Emily's apartment, and Derek shares that he feels a bit betrayed that Emily left, especially after they had just gotten shot at in the last episode by Doyle's men. But Rossi thinks his anger is more rooted in the fact that Emily crossed the line with Doyle, aka she potentially, but probably, slept with a terrorist.
It's never easy, you know, having to dig through a friend's life. But that's not what's bugging you, is it? You're angry because she crossed the line with Doyle.
No, I'm not. I'm angry because a group of mercenaries just shot at me. Don't much like being shot at, Rossi. Prentice knew exactly what was going on, but she didn't bother to tell any of us.
She couldn't without putting us at risk.
Come on, man, we don't know that. All we do know is that she slept with a terrorist for a profile. And instead of coming clean with us about her dirty laundry, she just ran with it.
You think it's that simple?
So there's a reason not to.
And so while at the apartment, they find her real passport. And Derek continues to be very dramatic about how he can't say he ever really knew Emily, blah, blah, blah. And then they find the necklace that Emily had flushed. And Rossi explains that it's actually a Gimmel ring, which I think is the same thing that you said last episode.
The Clotta ring, yeah.
It wasn't a Clotta ring, though, because it had a different design. Clotta is specifically the hands.
I thought it was. I thought it was the hands and the heart and the crown.
So it's something that's worn during an engagement by a husband and wife-to-be. So it's pretty much just like their engagement rings, like put together on this necklace.
Clotta ring. Hold on. It symbolizes a strong bond between two people. The interlocking rings represent an unbreakable union, which each partner's contribution to the relationship is equal. Oh, okay. So these are hands that are holding each other, as opposed to the Clotta, which has the one, like the heart.
Meanwhile, Emily has found the warehouse where Doyle and his men are hiding out, and we see another flashback, this time to Northern Ireland. An arms trade is taking place where Doyle's right-hand man tells him Lauren is too good to be true because no one else has ever been able to get them weapons this good. Doyle sends Lauren to the car and says that he will, quote, take care of her. In the car, Lauren and Ian have a very sultry conversation where they share a kiss, and Ian asks her why she never asks him about his business or Valhalla. And Lauren tells him that she figured he would tell her when he was ready to tell her. And then Ian pulls out the Gimmel ring and tells her that he is Valhalla. He tells her that he has no idea what kind of life they will have, but that he wants her to be his. So he's practically proposing to her.
I was going to get you the ring. You said you're not the marrying type.
It's beautiful.
look at me. The Amphalala. No idea what kind of life we're gonna have, but I just want you and mine.
Now back to the present. Garcia locates Clyde Easter boarding a flight to Boston. The team decides to meet him at the airport. Hotch has Easter detained, and in his luggage is a very large amount of cash. Emily is once again staking out the bar where she first met Doyle, and she receives a voicemail from Garcia on her old phone that she's now using. And the voicemail is really sweet, and she's basically pleading Emily to come home, and Emily gets emotional listening to it, and honestly, me too, girl. It's one of the, like, sweetest scenes of the show, I think.
Hey, it's me. Hotch asked me to try all your numbers, and I have this as an old listing, and you probably don't even use it anymore, but if it is you and you're out there, come home, please. God, Emily, what did you think? That we would just let you walk out of our lives? I am so furious at you right now. But then I think about how scared you must be, hiding in some dark place all alone. But you're not alone, okay? You are not alone. We are in that dark place with you. We are waving flashlights and calling your name. So if you can see us, come home.
And then she sees Doyle exiting the bar and plans a quick strike. She shoots into the car and sets off a flashbang. But Doyle was not in the car yet. So he had come up behind her and shoots her when she turns around to face him. She's wearing a vest, so she's not seriously hurt, but Doyle now has her. When the VAU is reviewing the footage from her assault, which, by the way, now they're on the VAU jet headed to Boston.
Hey, girl.
Derek is like, she threw a flashbang into a car and three people could have been killed. Is nobody else bothered by that? And then Rossi says, well, it was three bad guys.
Morgan is kind of going through it because, like, they were partners. And last episode and, like, the episodes before, he was, like, giving her every opportunity to be like, I know something's going on, Prentice. And then she was just, like, gaslighting him and being like, I'm fine. What are you talking about? I'm perfectly fine. So I get some of his frustration. I also feel like he was probably, because he was her partner, he was probably closest to her than anyone else. Working with her constantly, like, going to scenes with her. So I get it. Like, he's hurt in the way she was hurting last episode.
Now, Emily is tied up in Doyle's warehouse, and he pulls open her shirt and prepares to brand her with a four-leaf clover.
Where's my ring?
I flushed it.
I spent 7 years in hell because of that ring. So now, I'm gonna give you another gift. One you won't get rid of so easily. Four-leaf clover should be a nice addition to your other tattoos. You still have two, right?
Yep. And that's enough ink. Thanks.
Ink? The North Koreans can't afford ink. No. They brand themselves.
You know how you are, you're going to go after your ex-lover who's also a terrorist and you're looking fly with your eyelash extensions and your push-up bra. You know, like, that's my go-to when I'm going to go after my ex-lover who's also a terrorist. The first thing I do is put on the push-up bra and the fake eyelashes. But anyway, she looks gorgeous, but I was like, bestie, that's a push-up bra.
I was just looking at her eyes.
Shut the fuck up, Abigail. I was just looking at her eyes.
I respect women.
She's like about to get tortured, and you guys are talking about how good her eyes and her tits look.
We've never not said that this is like a not horny podcast.
It was more of the surprise of it all, because I was like, oh, bestie, didn't expect to see you there. Like, you know, it's not like one of those obnoxious push-up bras, but that is a padded push-up bra. The cleavage is impeccable.
Well, sometimes you just want to look good for the ex, even if you have no intention of getting back together.
Yeah, so, like, he starts branding her, and luckily they, like, cut away, because that would have been really hard to watch. While this is going down, the BAU has tracked down Fahey, the mole from the Irish mob in Boston. Doyle's men also find this out quickly, so that means that they're also doing some, like, counterintelligence stuff, too. The right-hand man, who we keep seeing even from those flashbacks, urges Doyle to kill Emily so that they have time to flee. But Emily tells Doyle that she knows what he wants and she can be his Lauren Reynolds again. Meanwhile, Hotch is at the airport interrogating Easter, and Rossi and Reed are talking to Fahey. But Fahey is only going to talk for a price. So while they try to figure out what they can do to pay him, Seaver presents an idea of getting him the smoke break he's been asking for, because that might get him to talk. So Hotch asks if she thinks that she can get him to talk, and Seaver says, "I'm pretty good with narcissists. I dated a few."
I love her so much. Pretty sure that Doyle's right-hand man is named Liam.
Yes.
Shout out, Liam. Non-feminist icon. They're trying to figure out what to do with Fahey. And I thought this was really interesting because, like, Doyle's like, oh, he smokes, right? And we cut away and we don't really know, like, what that means. But I just thought that that was, like, an interesting tidbit for the planning and organization of the UNSIP.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're kind of profiling right back. Which, like, makes sense, right? Like, they were leaders of the IRA back during the Troubles. So, like, they have a lot of combat and, like, experience with paramilitary activities. So this would not be, like, out of the norm for them. Back to Doyle and Emily, and now they're replaying the night that they first met. They're at the part where they start speaking French to each other when Emily asks him to take the handcuffs off of her and then is trying to talk sweet to get into his head. Doyle isn't fooled and instead has Liam, the right-hand man, pull out a video feed of Fahey's conversation with Seaver and Rossi, which is taking place on the roof of the precinct. And apparently there's a sniper a few buildings away who is threatening to shoot them. Emily convinces them to just shoot Fahey because if he dies, the trail to Doyle goes away and her team wouldn't have anything. That was obviously what Doyle had hoped Emily might say, because after she says that, he says, "Hello, Lauren. Good to see you again." Clearly, there had been some ruthlessness required of Prentice during her time undercover as well. They oblige and shoot Fahey.
There are some really good moments during this. One of them is when Prentice asks Doyle to take off the handcuffs, and he hits her with a "fool me once," which always reminds me of season one, episode 3, "Can't Fool Me Four Times," or whatever it's called. Also, we get this bizarre scene with Fahey's rooftop smoke break, which, again, they take him up to the roof. It's Rossi, it's Seaver. Fahey says probably the most iconic line of this entire episode. He takes a drag from his cigarette and he looks at Seaver and he says, "You know when a cigarette is best? After having sex with me."
"You know when a cigarette is best? After sex with me."
"Mind your manners. You're already extorting us for Prentice's location."
"So, just out of curiosity, what's it like working for Doyle?"
"Yeah, he's not so tough."
"Wow, I bet you're his hookup, aren't you? I mean, after all,
You're the man.
I could show you how much of a man I really am. All right. Jeez, what's with the sexy cop, bad cop routine?
And he has this ridiculous patch, like, this ridiculous patch on his ear from when Emily, like, shot at him. Because she doesn't actually shoot him, right? But she just grazes the bullet past his ear.
Seaver, this entire episode, is wearing this very, like, not kinky, like, sexy, but, like, kind of a kinky thread type of, like, white, off beige white turtleneck. And the second you see her, you're like, oh no, because, like, girl. So Fahey gets shot, the blood spatters everywhere on this beautiful, expensive, you know, turtleneck that probably costs more than my entire house, and I'm just feeling for it. But anyways, I you know, shout out to that actor for playing that part and really going all out. It was very Lyle to me, like, you know, from that episode that we did a couple episodes ago.
Now, Rossi realizes the same thing that Emily had just said, that without Fahey, they don't have much to go on. But he relies on Seaver to get a fresh perspective, since she's known Emily for the shortest time, and Rossi pushes her to say what doesn't add up to her about the case. And Seaver lands on the idea of families. Why was Doyle targeting families to get back at Emily?
You haven't worked with Prentice for 5 years. You're unprejudiced. Now, what's been bugging you since we left Quantico? How about the affair? That bugs me. How does the two of them sleeping together change Doyle's profile?
I don't know.
Come on, Ashley, that's a textbook.
I haven't read every textbook.
You want to hold your hand? Fine. What doesn't fit? Just say it. What are you thinking? Spit it out!
Why families?
Keep going.
Prentice is Doyle's stressor. He wants revenge on the woman who betrayed him, and I understand that. But why kill that child in D.C.?
And from there, Garcia and JJ find out that it was Jeremy Wolfe who had sold the team out to Doyle. So there was this list of all the people's real identities, where they could be found, things like that, etc. And Jeremy had sent that to Doyle, so he was the one who originally sold them out, which is why his death is a bit more inconspicuous than the others, because he only died by poisoning, if we remember.
And he was Sia's fiance. And I think he sold, I'm pretty sure it was like he sold them out for money. But they don't think that Sia knew about it.
Yeah, because she didn't tap into the money.
She had a retirement fund. I think they actually say that she had an IRA. Not as in, like, the IRA, like, what Doyle belongs to, but, like, you know, like, an IRA where you put your money so when you're older. But also, like, she's definitely not old enough to, like, pull that without, like, any, you know, fees.
Yeah, but I guess if you're, like, fleeing for your life, you might, like, take a... like,
you'd empty all your accounts.
Given this information, Hotch uses that to get more from Easter, the JTF handler. And they decide to combine forces, but Easter warns him about how dangerous Doyle is and says that the only way to truly catch Doyle is to kill him. So Hotch has to be prepared to break the oath that he made to his country. When Easter reviews the case with the team, they find out that the way Doyle executed the child in this recent case could mean Samuel as a surrogate for his own child. However, Easter claims that Doyle didn't have any children. So then we cut back to Doyle and Emily, and Doyle has now decided to kill Emily and tells her that it's time for her last confession. When Emily tells him to take her to where he died, which gets Doyle to untie her. We see another flashback where Lauren is playing hide and seek with an adorable blonde boy in Doyle's compound. The kid is first introduced as the housekeeper's son, but Doyle reveals that the boy is actually his son. He had to pass Declan off as Louise's son instead of his own so that no one could use Declan against him.
Louise raises Declan so no one can use him against me. But he's mine. And he needs a mother.
I can't do that. Not here.
Then I get you out.
Or I could get you out. I have resources, contacts. He would be safer, and he'd have a father.
You know what I am, Lauren? A warrior. I lead warriors. I raise warriors. I can't just leave.
You want me to raise your son so he can have your life?
He offers to get her out of the life, and she offers the same, but Ian wants Declan to be raised to take over his life as an arms dealer. Lauren tells him that she would do a lot of things to make Ian happy, but she wouldn't do that. So after the flashback, Doyle tells Emily that the North Koreans used everything the JTF team gave to them about him, which included pictures of Declan and Louise being murdered. And that's how he knew it was Emily who had sold him out. Apparently, the warehouse that they're in currently was very intentional because it was where the photos of Declan were taken before he was killed. So now Doyle plans to kill Emily in that same place. Emily tells Doyle there's something that he needs to know about those photos. So then we cut back to the BAU, and Garcia has identified Declan from the case file, and she uncovers the photos that were taken from Luis and Declan's shooting, and she's able to find the location of the warehouse. Meanwhile, Emily is recounting what had happened after she left Doyle's compound. She had learned that Interpol had included the notes about Declan in the profile. He, as in Declan, could be used as a pawn and was not safe. She had decided to, quote, end his suffering before it could begin. That leads Doyle to slap her, and she continues to tell him that she only put Declan in the profile after the pictures from his death had been taken. She knew that Declan would be safe. So at the same time, Garcia is with Spencer and Derek when they notice that the hand of the shooter is visible in a couple of the photos, and the shooter has chewed nails, meaning that the person who killed Declan and Luis was Emily. That's when Emily reveals that she knew exactly what happened to Declan because she was the one holding the gun in the photos.
It's heartbreaking because we're like, no, like, we've known Prentice this long. There's no way that she killed this really cute little child. Like, that's so heartbreaking. But, like, you don't know. Like, in the moment, you don't know.
It's an intense buildup, but I'm glad there's, like, real, real quick resolve to this. So,
yes, yes, yes. Because you can't really come back from killing a child. Like, you know, that's one of those things where there's no redemption arc for you if you do that.
Obviously, Doyle goes apeshit when Emily's taunting him, but then he realizes that the murders had been staged.
You want to hear his last words to me? He said, I looked pretty good for a dead kid, didn't I? And then he got on the plane, and I never saw him again.
He's alive!
Just because I held a gun to him doesn't mean I shot him. I only had to make you and the North Koreans believe he was dead.
So as this is happening, the BAU begins its raid of the warehouse. Emily continues to fight with Doyle, stalling for as long as she can. However, when they cut the power in the warehouse, Doyle is able to regain the upper hand, and he impales Emily with a piece of wood. He tries to get Emily to tell him where Declan is, but she won't. She probably doesn't even know. While taking out Doyle's right-hand man, Liam's hand is on the trigger of his gun, and so he sprays bullets and gunshots everywhere. So that alerted Doyle to the BAU's presence, and he flees. Morgan, shortly after, gets to Emily and is frantically calling for help. He tells her that he knows what she did for Declan and that he was proud of her. But she eventually loses consciousness.
Hey, it's me. I'm right here. You're going to be all right. Stay with me, baby. Come on, stay with me. No, no, I am not letting you go. Help me! Listen to me, I know why you did all of this. I know what you did for Declan. I'm so proud of you. Do you understand that I am proud of you because you are my friend and you are my partner? No, Emily, come on, stay with me. If you can hear me, please just squeeze my hand.
We talked about this before where like this was a plot point where she specifically could not tell them. Or then, like, these episodes would not have worked and it wouldn't have happened. But, like, in that moment, he's just trying to, like, you know, keep her alive. I mean, it's just, it's really heartbreaking. I mean, it's really heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, like, all of the pieces click for Derek, too. He's like, okay, now I realize, like, why she actually couldn't tell us all of this stuff. Now they cut to the hospital waiting room where the team, sans JJ, is waiting. And JJ alerts the team that Emily never made it off the table.
She never made it off the table.
Spent. I didn't get a chance to say goodbye.
However, she and Hotch secretly exchange words behind closed doors. All of this is happening in a very quick sequence, but the next scene is Emily's funeral, with the team carrying her casket and laying flowers for her. Everyone's pretty torn up, but there's still a weird energy between JJ and Hotch, who continue to share looks. This all comes together when JJ is walking toward a Parisian cafe and hands a manila envelope to a brunette woman who we only see from behind. And in the envelope include passports from 3 different countries and a bank account in each to keep the woman comfortable. The woman grabs the envelope, and we see that she has chewed fingernails, so it's undeniably Prentice. She thanks JJ and gets up and walks away, the Eiffel Tower sparkling in the distance. So if there was any doubt left that Prentice's death had been staged, the closing quote is, "People will believe a big lie sooner than a little one. And if you repeat it frequently enough, people will sooner or later believe it." Anyway, this is my favorite episode ever. And I obviously have so many thoughts.
Because it's hard to avoid spoilers for Criminal Minds, just because it's been around for such a hot minute. I like knew that she had faked her death. But I didn't realize that it was within that same episode revealed to the viewers that her death had been faked.
Yeah, that's like the only thing that I can say I don't really like about this episode. I think they should have kept that Paris scene for the beginning of season 7 when Emily returns. And so there's like actual belief that Emily could really be dead.
Yeah, I thought it was a big surprise. Just, for some reason, I had assumed they were pulling a Sherlock on us.
It works.
Yeah, it's fine. I just think, they could have, made it more... sometimes I like to suffer.
There's nothing I like more than that, trope of, does she love him or is it an act? I just think that works so well. I think the chemistry between Ian Doyle and Emily is undeniable. I mean, I don't have a ton to say because it is genuinely just so well done.
I do wonder about Emily's feelings for Doyle, but I think the inclusion of Declan in the story, you could say, she kept the necklace as a reminder of what she did for Declan. Because even when we get answers a little bit later in season 7, I think it does all come back to the kid. This episode sets up so much of season 7, which season 7 is my favorite season probably. Spoiler, since Emily's not really dead, she does come back at the beginning of season 7 when they're about to, actually catch Doyle for good. Obviously, now a big storyline of that season is how does the team cope with, finding out that Emily was actually alive this whole time and that, Hotch and JJ, knew about it and all of this stuff, so.
Should we rate this episode?
Yes, please.
I feel like it should get a 100.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
I was about to be we should rate it, but I'm as if we're not going to just give it a 100 because it's so well done.
One of the great iconic Criminal Minds episodes, I think anyone would agree. And of course, there were lots of, not so great things happening behind the scenes, but
still a fun episode.
It did sure make for really good television in the right end. Yeah. Jen, thank you so much for joining us for this 2-episode arc. You will have to come back soon and do some more with us. Where can the people find you?
Oh, on Instagram at wheelsup.cm.
And if you want, we have a Ko-fi, we have a Patreon. We have all sorts of stuff, but really the most helpful thing is to drop us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast thing of choice. You can follow us everywhere on Subs Podcast. You can follow me, yournewapartment.tumblr.com.
You can follow me on Instagram at little_gnome_fast.
Peace out, guys. Hope you enjoyed the Valhalla Lauren arc.
Yeah.
Give us all of your thoughts, please. All right. Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.